Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the Open Air Podcast. My name is Devang Desai and I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Simon Bushell. Bush, the U.S. Open in full swing, and what a freaking fantastic tournament it has been. For all of the hatred we might have spewed beforehand, I've got to say, I've been having a good time watching the tennis. What about you, sir?
I've watched a disgraceful amount of tennis, Dev. Please save me. I've watched too much in the last week.
You're among friends here, sir. This is a safe space. What was the darkest place you found yourself in watching this? What match and when did you question your life?
I think it was the moment, because I streamed the TSN app through my Xbox One. It was the moment that the Xbox One just powered off by itself
because I'd
had it on too long.
In action. And that, depending on your setting, could be days. That could be days, right? Depending on the setting you have, right?
It was like one of those where I was doing a bit of work on my laptop on the side, and then the Xbox turned off, and then the TV itself turned off because it had been on too long. So that's probably not a good sign for how long the constant supply of television has been on for me.
It's wonderful to know we watch tennis the same way, basically, because I also use the TSN app through my Xbox One, which is, I found, really easy. But people are using Fire Sticks and other technologies, but no, it's Xbox One. I don't even game anymore, basically. It is just a media device. Crazy how that works. Man, I don't think I was being hyperbolic either by saying this has been some really good tennis. And I think the drama with the comebacks, and we've had 32 five-set matches so far as you record this, has been awesome. But also the crowd, Bush, the crowd has been lit, as the youth say.
It's been really fun. The tennis has been of a level where it's produced a huge amount of drama, and just having the crowd back in, having the crowd, let's say, a little boozy, has enabled this to be a tournament that has had some amazing atmospheres and incredible moments. I think that's the thing that I will remember through this first week. It's just the moments that it's produced and just the constant supply of storylines which it's provided with us. We are blessed to have this week happen as a tennis podcast because there's so much to talk about.
Lots of drama on the court. We'll start with something that happened early on in the tournament, and it feels like ages ago now, but Bathroomgate, Stefano Tsitsipas becoming public enemy number one, Andy Murray turning the fans on Stefanos. Is that fair to say, Bush? Probably not, but this has definitely generated a lot of controversy. I think tennis is now specializing in this like pseudo bullshit important stuff that doesn't really matter, but yet that's all anyone will talk about. People really didn't like Stefanos as the tournament went on, and we saw how lit the crowd was when Carlos Alcaraz beat him in a five-set epic, but like usually you feel like Stefanos has quite a bit of crowd support on his side. Where did you come down on this, Bush?
It was interesting, wasn't it, listening to all the different things and the fallout from this, because it's not like it was just a random journeyman he was playing. He was playing Andy Murray, and Andy Murray is oftentimes the spokesperson of truth when it comes to these situations. And I think him having the opinion that he did, an ice cold handshake at the net following the events of what happened in this match. And you realize that pretty much everyone on the tour was asked about this in press conferences following the events of here. So Sloane Stephens obviously had some really interesting quotes. Dominic Thiem was asked on TV. I saw Novak Djokovic was asked about it. Andy Roddick was asked about it. So it just went on and on and on of people who had opinions about this. And it seems like this match will be a turning point for this rule to change, because someone compiled together, I was reading it on Twitter the other day, someone compiled together a list of the bathroom breaks that Stefanos Tsitsipas has taken, and it is your 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 minute long ones, and this is not good for the sport. And I think in general, this will probably be the last time that we'll see this rule in place the way that it is, because it's become so high profile, and mm-hmm. you get the sense that both the ATP and the WTA are probably going to do something about it following this tournament.
Well, I saw some of the discourses like, how do you enforce this? And like, all the tournaments are different, and sometimes the bathroom is not in the same place in every stadium, which is obviously true and like very literal. But I think for show courts, you can definitely have different rules. And I think this is just something that has to be done. I feel like the amount of gamesmanship that's involved with the bathroom break now, and we've seen all of the GOATs and literally the who's who of the best players ever use this mechanism to their advantage. Obviously not to the level of Tsitsipas, probably, and not in this day and age of people counting it. Like, the fact that we can watch a YouTube video of recounting every time he's done this, I think is a bit different as well. But I have found the vitriol a bit over the top. Mm-hmm. And I think there are reasons to dislike Stefanos and not to be down with him or his team or his coaching or the way he gets coached or his dad. Or like, there's reasons not to be a fan of him. His vaccine sentiments, there's a lot of stuff. But I found this to be a weird kind of piling on slash bullying. And then, I mean, I love Twitter. I love talking shit. I love Andy Murray doing it all the time. But I also thought it was kind of weird. You have this multi-time Grand Slam winner going at him still afterwards. Like, at a certain point, it's like, okay, well, get over yourself.
Wow. I think it's the first time you've ever had a anti-Andy Murray take on this podcast.
And I know.
It's a strange
it
one
is.
For you to get off the train.
The thing is, if you want to spell Tsitsipas's name wrong in the Bezos tweet, that's fine. But to spell his name wrong and Bezos's name wrong, I think it was too much. And I also noticed Tsitsipas's brother getting involved in talking spicy as well. So I don't think anyone looked good. But I just thought, I mean, Andy, for me, like you said, like I back him almost all the time. And I think he's usually on the right side of things. And he hadn't have qualms with this rule. But he's talking about being ready for this in his press conference after the match. It didn't seem like he was ready at all for it, because it completely rocked him.
No, and some of the comments that you were talking about post-match, he very literally said, "I lost respect for him." That was the exact quote that was floating around, which it does seem like this got under the skin of a lot of people, didn't it? And I think tennis players are weird creatures, because there's not much that you can do outside of the rules, because everyone is watching you. And there is so many rules that are in place in the sport of tennis that this is the one thing that seems to really, really annoy a lot of people. And I saw a lot of things floating around with regards to how Denis Shapovalov sort of clapped back at him with the whole racket tap on the court thing a few years ago, which eventually Steph stopped doing that as well. But don't hate the player, hate the rules. The structure's the problem here. Tsitsipas, really, I mean, he's doing nothing wrong. Like, he's just playing to the rules that are given to him. Although he is not covering himself in glory and inside of his press conference, you have to say, when he was engaged in a conversation with Stuart Fraser in the press conference, when he was effectively trying to pull the victim card of how long it took for Andy Murray to take that break in the final.
Getting it wrong. And yeah, getting it wrong.
And he was just wrong. Which is quite amusing to everyone involved.
That was great.
It was.
The fact that he probably had that pulled for him. He's like, well, I've got them now, when it was clearly still just obviously wrong. Fantastic. It's a shame. It's a shame that I think I might have chosen him as we wait for our next Messiah post-Fed in the personal game, if we want to choose favorites. Stefanos was definitely a contender, but I don't think he is anymore based on how this year has gone. Frankly, it's been kind of a shame. That was not the only major headline to develop on the court and then merge to an off-the-court story as well. That's a tough segue, but I'm trying here. Naomi Osaka losing to Leila Fernandez. We'll talk about that match a bit later, but Naomi announcing after the match he's going to take a break from the game. I saw you commented on this on Twitter, and I thought it was very simple and perfect, because at this point, there are bigger things in tennis, obviously, but I'm curious what you thought watching the end of that match, because I think, obviously, if you have rooting interest for Canadian tennis and you clearly want to see Leila do well, it was a really tough watch.
It really was, yeah. It was tough to watch just the drama involved in it, and knowing that someone is going through a whole lot of stuff as well in regards to Naomi Osaka. I was not really surprised to see the announcement come out following this match that she was going to step away from the sport for a little while, because clearly this is someone who's been through a hell of a lot over the past year. And I mean, you mentioned the point that I put out on Twitter, and I think that's, I mean, I said it all in that, which is just like, you should never be afraid, regardless of the stage of your life, to make sure that you're healthy. And we, just given the structures that we have in life, it's not often that easy for a lot of people, because we don't give people the time to step away from their work or their personal life, just because we're always required to have an income or to have a rent or to have a mortgage or any of these sort of things. And it becomes much more straightforward and clear when you're a multimillionaire, you know, bordering on a billionaire, Naomi Osaka, who you can take the time. But I think she sets a good example for a lot of people as well, which is, if you are feeling shitty, if you are not feeling healthy in any capacity, give yourself the time to get better. And she is a good example for a lot of people.
It's well said. And I think this, it's not directly related, but Sloane Stephens talking about just the awful garbage she gets on social media after games, after losses, usually after losses in which some people probably bet on it and lost some money and are hurling horrible garbage at Sloane Stephens and other players. You see it all the time, but Sloane called it out after she lost this week at the tournament. Another one of those situations where it's like, we know this is happening, but it requires these athletes to show us it time and time again for it to click, I guess. Like, we saw in soccer a ton as well, Bush.
Oh, God, yeah.
Athletes all the time showing us what they get, and it's like, holy hell, like, what? And yet, we have to be like, all right, Sloane, show us, like, prove it. When really, there has to be some action finally freaking taken here, because I feel like we've been in this situation before.
Well, we will get into it, I think, later on in this year, because we have some stuff to cover in regards to gambling and tennis and the wider ramifications of laws being changed inside of both Canada and the United States when it comes to in-game gambling on specific sports. And tennis has obviously had a global presence in that, and it's been in the headlines a lot, just given the fact that it has had some very high-profile situations of either match-fixing corruption and effectively, like, lots of nonsense that's come along with it. And this is just another byproduct of that, which is that people have money riding on situations and they take it out on individuals. It's happened for as long as in-game gambling has existed. I think it's something that tennis has not really reckoned with in a whole lot of ways. And I'm not sure the sporting world inside of North America has really reconciled that yet, which is, be careful what you wish for when it comes to this. And I'm not anti-gambling in any capacity. I'm not one of those people that is just, you know, shut up shop and it can't happen. But when you do open this box, the players are going to suffer the consequences of it. And Sloane Stephens is a really good example of what happened with that, especially given Tennis Channel's very cozy relationship with a lot of gambling companies over the last few months. In terms of how high profile the promotion it's had with it, it's not really surprising this sort of thing happens, and it's kind of sad when it does.
You mentioned the tropical storm, and it's a bit on the nose. It's like, we've had all of these like just absolute crises one after another, but the big one, the elephant, climate crisis, climate change. We're back, baby. We never left. Obviously, it's still happening. We were talking off air before the show, like, remember the fires in Australia in 2020? It's like, yeah, feels like many, many years ago, but another reminder of what's going on. This week at the U.S. Open itself, Bush, it looked ridiculous. I think even if you were at Louis Armstrong Stadium with the cover, there was rain coming in sideways because of how crazy the wind was. And it was a harrowing trek for people at the tournament to get home. It's the fact that a lot of people did not get out of this safely. There was a lot of deaths in New York and New Jersey. But I was a bit shocked they ended up playing on Thursday after seeing what we saw. But the fact that Kevin Anderson finished his match late that night as well, I was like, wow, I wasn't expecting that. Did you think they should have played at all? Like, it felt a bit bizarre.
I didn't think they should have played. And I saw a tweet floating around, which is a side-by-side comparison between The Day After Tomorrow, the movie that came out in 2004, and New York City from Wednesday evening, which is funny because I went back and watched The Day After Tomorrow last night because I was curious to see if it still held up in any capacity.
You're obviously a huge Dennis Quaid guy as well. I know that.
Of course, yeah. Yeah. Jake Gyllenhaal, Emmy Rossum, you know, what a cast.
Listen.
All stars again, in 2004.
We love the scientist going to find his kid in New York angle. It's just classic.
Coming full circle to this, do you think this tournament was safe on Wednesday evening? I sure as hell didn't think Maybe. It looked particularly safe to be inside of that court, just given what was happening. And it sure as hell didn't look safe to be a player, given how much both Diego Schwartzman and Kevin Anderson were complaining to the match official. And it took far, far too long for this one to get called off when there was a literal monsoon coming through the rain, the rooftop on Grand Slam Court, and it didn't get called off until it took far, far too long. And in general, I feel sorry for the players. I also felt really sorry for the fans. If you watch that stadium,
yeah,
my goodness, it must have been terrifying to be inside of there.
We've had a really brutal summer in terms of the heat as well. And I think there were some issues of people having heat exhaustion in the early days of the tournament, Monday, Tuesday, and then we get the deluge on Wednesday. It's like, what other roll of dice can we get in terms of, hey, the climate is not acting normal. There are problems. It turns out 100-year-old infrastructure in New York City is not able to adapt with what is currently happening because things are going way wrong. So I thought it was, again, like, man, we don't need this many signs. Perhaps some people do, because I guess not everyone is fully buying in, quote unquote, that this is a real problem. But the fact that we had that during this tournament, I thought was fitting. And for a sport, we've talked about this before on Open Air. It's like we have a sport where players have to travel around the world and the carbon footprint is massive. And there's things that we should possibly be thinking about when this sport gets reorganized to limit that. Because I think the reorganization is coming, Bush, with more news in terms of Challenger Tour events being bought up and and bigger companies kind of getting their own silos. Perhaps this is something they can tackle as well, or is that a little too pie in the sky?
It's a pretty big question that needs to get answered, right? That's the unfortunate part about all of this, which is that it doesn't matter whether or not it's too difficult. It matters that it has to happen, because it does, as does every professional sport that chooses to fly either globally or even inside of their own countries. This has to get taken care of. Like, we cannot have that level of carbon emissions, and we cannot continue to do this. So it's a sport that has to reconcile with that. And I'm not convinced it's remotely done any work on that, because I've not really seen the public pressure yet that comes crashing down on professional sports, because it's sort of this last bastion that people don't really want to connect the dots on, is that we as fans play into this, like that we want to watch a global sport and we want to watch people go to the far corners of the world to play the sport. But at the same time, we can't have that, because look what happens. Look what happens in New York, and look what's happened to the rest of the world. It's either on fire or underwater, and that's probably not a good sign for the next 10 years.
I don't want this to sound like a distraction, but also tennis right now. We are watching Botik van der Zandersloop pull off the unthinkable against Diego Schwartzman. But another tough segue into our next segment, where we talk about some of the tennis we've seen. Bush, give me your best pronunciation of the Dutch 25-year-old's name before we go to break.
Botik van der Zandersloop. There you go. Perfect. Nailed it.
Fantastic. All right, then we'll have Botik say it himself.
Botik van der Zandersloop.
When we come back, 2 minutes on 10 matches. We go through what we've loved so far in Flushing.
Botik van der Zandersloop.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to the Open Air Podcast. Simon, you have some great ideas from time to time, but I think this might be one of your best. So I'll let you take the floor here. It's a whirlwind tour, I see.
I mean, there's been so many good matches. that's the problem. Like, this tournament has produced so much good stuff, despite all of my protestations going into this tournament about how much I hate it. I'm ashamed to admit that I've loved the tournament, and there's been a lot of really good stuff. And how do we get through all of that? How do we get through all of the storylines? 10 matches, 2 minutes each. We're going to try and be concise. We're going to try and get through all of the big ones. And even inside of these 10 matches, we've still had to leave out a few storylines. And I'm sorry for that, but we just have to make the cut somewhere. So let's do it. 2 minutes on the watch. Let's go. Tsitsipas versus Alcaraz. Devang, your thoughts on the Spanish teenager coming of age and ousting Stefanos Tsitsipas, who everyone now hates.
So villain aside and weird Bane existence, like energy Stefanos had by the end of this, where Carlos Alcaraz felt a bit like Batman and he had the Lego block hair. It fit way too well. I honestly, my biggest takeaway is I felt really good being on the ground floor for Carlos Alcaraz, thanks to you, mostly Bush, and you hyping this kid up forever. But it's funny, like this week, I had a friend who was at the tournament saying he was watching him, and he just remarked he gets to every ball, and he's not like Rafa Nadal at all. Like, they're not, they don't play the same hand, and they're just different players. But the one similarity that if you want to dig and find is that fight, quote unquote, and that stick-to-itiveness and that refusal to lose, all the cliches you can have, he has that young at 18. And I think, to me, that was the biggest takeaway, because when he went away in the fourth set, and I feared that the fifth set would be more of the same, pretty quickly you realized that wasn't going to be the case. And it's not like he tanked entirely, but I felt like he was conserving himself like a much older player would. So that's what I took away.
He's so aggressive. He's so, so aggressive for an 18-year-old and someone who hits the ball so hard off either wing. It's astonishing, right? And all of that, I think, nonsense in terms of comparisons between Rafa and Nadal. He has speed, which absolutely is a comparison point you could make with the great Spaniard. But outside of that, man, he stands on the baseline, he hits. He's hitting big, big, big shots. And that is not something that you could say about Rafael Nadal at 16 years of age. He was a counterpuncher at that age. And Carlos Alcaraz stands on the front foot and hits very, very hard. He looks a lot closer to Carlos Moya at the age of 18 than he does to Rafael Nadal, if you want another Spanish comparison.
Leila Fernandez defeating Naomi Osaka. Another fantastic result for Canada in a week full of them. Denis Shapovalov losing on Saturday night to Lloyd Harris. Obviously not one of those good moments. But Simon, Leila Fernandez, I think when you listen to this, she'll have turned 19. It's her birthday this weekend as well. I guess my biggest question for you, what's changed the most with her game since we've seen her first?
I mean, she's just, her timing of the ball is exceptional, and her ability to defend, I would say. It's like she's always had the ability to hit shots, and like just her overall craft, I would say, has become a lot better, and the stature of that serve has improved as well. It's interesting. Leniana Fernandez is a remarkable striker of a tennis ball for someone who is so slight of stature. And I think that is what comes with maturity as well, which is building into your body. She still looks like a baby Mario character in Mario Tennis when she's playing on the court. And I don't mean that as a mark of disrespect. She just is still so slight to be able to produce the power that she does. It's incredible, and I'm all here for it.
We go from the future to two vets who have given us plenty of tennis to watch over the years. Garbiñe Muguruza defeating Victoria Azarenka. The women's side is something we've talked about at length in terms of having quarterfinals or semifinals way too early in tournaments. That's just where we're at depth-wise. Do you rate Muguruza as a contender for this title, Bush? Because we record this, I think she plays Krejcikova later, so we could look really dumb or really smart, but I'm curious why you listed this match down as one of your favorites.
I think just because of the history between, well, Azarenka's history at this tournament, obviously going to the final in very recent times, and her record on a hard court as well, and Garbiñe Muguruza, someone who has always talked about having the ability to do it on a hard court as well. I just thought in general, this was a really exciting watch, and one that will get overlooked in because there's been so many other good matches, but this one was really close. There was some clean hitting by both, and it was one of those matches where, yeah, maybe not for everyone, but I think as a tennis hardcore nut, watching two players figure out each other and try and different ways to get points won, I loved it. And Garbiñe Muguruza is going to be a very dangerous floater for the rest of this tournament. Although she's about to run into a buzzsaw in Barbara Krejcikova, who doesn't seem to want to lose to anyone.
We record this as Elise Mertens plays Sabalenka as well, doubles partners. That should be fantastic. The bottom half, think Angie Kerber and Leila Fernandez probably were going to play earlier, but Botic and Diego Schwartzen went way long. I think this might be Leila Fernandez's first lefty on lefty match in a few months as well. And Angie Kerber has played quite a few lefties, so I love those variables in terms of being a tough matchup. I think Leila Fernandez is generally for a lot of players, but now she's playing the super wily Angie Kerber. In terms of litmus tests and where are they at, was there a better test for Felix Auger-Aliassime than RBA Bush? I think this is probably the rite of passage player you have to beat to be serious at a slam.
Roberto Bautista Agut, who was sporting, I believe, spoilers for our final segment, the best outfit of the whole tournament. So clean, lovely straight lines, just a really lovely outfit from RBA. Would you like to come back here, or should we save that for the final segment?
You can keep going. I'm still stunned by that. I need to relook at this.
Which is entertaining because he was playing against a guy who maybe had the worst outfit in the whole tournament. As it was so kindly said, his outfit looked like it had been run over by a truck. It looked like that sort of Adidas outfit.
You are a sucker for solid colors. RVA's shirt is ridiculous. I don't know what you're talking about. Wow. Okay.
I guess this is a tennis segment, isn't it? I should wait till
I'm taking it back. I'm taking it back. Lacoste owes you whatever you've signed off on for that. But the tennis part, I mean, it looked like it was going to be straight sailing as well for him. Two sets up to love. You have a situation where it's not going his way very quickly, and yet he found a way. And again, this is cliche talk in the first week. You need to find ways against players that are very tough outs like RBA is.
Yeah, I mean, RBA's nickname should be like the clock or the metronome or something like that, because it's just hypnotic watching him strike a tennis ball. It's beautiful. His timing is absolutely incredible. And he's such a tough out that I was incredibly impressed by the way that Auger-Aliassime actually recovered, because for all the world, I thought that fifth set he was just going to bottle it and throw it away. And it really looked that way to me until he righted the ship and managed to get over the line. And I tell you what, Felix Auger-Aliassime hits a big ball when he wants to. When he's being aggressive and he doesn't get negative and passive in points, he's really, really dangerous. And you see why he's a player that's made all of those finals and was so highly thought of as a junior and had all this hype coming into him. Because God damn it, Dev, this kid is totally capable of winning a Grand Slam, completely capable of doing it. And when you see matches like that against a player who he should have finished off in straight sets, lost his way and came back and still managed to win, it's good signs for the future.
Tony Nadal in the house as well, watching on. I think he saw some classic Tony Nadal yawns. He saw him be somewhat interested in what was happening on the court, which is nice. Have to wonder what's going through his head. It's got to be a weird adjustment from watching your family to now not watching your family, but watching someone you still care about in terms of their professional development. So that's a change for him. Speaking of FAA, by the time you listen to this, he'll have played Francis Tiafoe, who had one of the wins of the week against Andrei Rublev. Andrei Rublev way out of gas by the end of this point. But Tiafoe Bush, from beating Tsitsipas at Wimbledon to now beating Rublev at the US Open, big match player foe. I think that's safe to say. And I don't know where you stand on this match against Felix, but it'll be fascinating. I think this is a match Felix has to win, but I think Francis Tiafoe at 23 years old didn't level out. He's still ascending, which I think is a wonderful thing to see after maybe we wrote him off a bit too early.
You go through bowl season in college football and you have an assortment of names. This is the someone has to win bowl. Like literally someone has to get through this one tonight. Career underachievers and people that we've had so much higher expectations.
Sponsored by Meineke Car Repair or something, right? Some sort of oil people, right.
He's such a strange player, Francis Tiafoe, because so much was expected of him coming up. And you have to say he's not quite lived up to the hype that was expected out of him. And he has the fire. He has the energy. He's a crowd favorite. The crowd's going to be well behind him in his match against FAA. I am still very, very unsure about what the weapons are, as I have been from the very start. I've been a very negative voice when it comes to Francis Tiafoe, but he does have some things that a lot of players do not have, and that is grit and that is fight, and he will bring that in bucket loads to this match. And you have to say, it's going to be really exciting to watch these two play against each other. It's going to be a great crowd, and it's going to be one of those things that both guys are going to be very nervous, and hopefully it's going to produce some good tennis.
The bottom half's wide open. The winner of that plays the winner of Carlos Alcaraz versus Petr Gojicic, another qualifier. Incredible story, but it's wide open. Even if you've seen Carlos Alcaraz win the match against Tsitsipas, FA has to consider himself a good bet right now, which again is different territory for him. You've got BVDZ now looking at a probable matchup against Danny Medvedev in the quarterfinals. That looks fantastic for Danny. I am going to push back slightly. I know we are running up against 2 minutes for Foe, but maybe the age thing has changed in terms of when people are supposed to be ready, back to a more normal age, Bush, back to a more early 2000s era when you can still blossom at 23, 24, 25. Like, Bodic is 25. So, I mean, what does that mean?
And it was the first time in his career that Francis Tiafoe has gone back-to-back third rounds. So it goes to show you, right? Like, there is precedent for this, that he is making that leap. And he's had some big wins as well. Like, he did take out Stefanos Tsitsipas in the first round of Wimbledon. Like, that takes something to be able to do that to a guy coming off the back end of a final in Grand Slams. Like, he clearly has something. Quite whether or not he's a top 10 player, in my eyes, he's not. Is he a top 20 player? Absolutely. I believe that's the case. Yeah. Is he capable of challenging for the back end of Grand Slams? I don't believe so, but time will tell, right?
It will. Let's do a quick prediction to see who seems really smart as you listen to this on Monday. Who wins tonight?
I think TFO wins.
Wow. Okay. I'll take Felix in four, but I'm a bit perturbed by your confidence of your pick there, because you must know something. Should we get to Britain's next great hope?
Emma Raducanu. She's really good, Dev. Like, scary.
That's scary straight good. Up. She's really good. She's really good.
Like, she's terrifying. There's very little else that you could say about it. Like, to have the power, the ability, and the movement, and the tennis brain at the age of 18, and to prove that that Wimbledon run was not a fluke, but actually a really good marker of how good this player is. Watching that match against Sir Robert Tormo, Emma Raducanu looks like a top 10 player already. At the age of 18. That's astonishing to say from a player who wasn't on tour last year. This kid is really, really good. Really good.
I think the biggest takeaway from watching these 18-year-olds is just continuously being like, they're really, really good, but without any sort of qualifier. Like, we don't have to mention their age, really, right? Leila Fernandez, Raducanu, Carlos Alcaraz, like, they may be 18, but they're here ready to possibly keep winning. Raducanu has Shelby Rogers next, who I think we'll talk about in a bit. It's doable. We're looking at the first qualifier to reach the quarterfinals since Kai Kanepi in 2017. But then after that, it's Barbara Gerken, 1981. Like, people don't do this as qualifiers. And yet, if you look at the men's and women's draw, there's quite a few qualies. It's awesome. Love the story. And again, love people not being one-hit anythings, even though no one is a one-hit wonder. I hate that phrase, I think. But I love that she backed up Wimbledon with this.
Sir Robert Tormo is a good player. Is a good player on hard courts and someone who's won a title on a hard court.
Right.
Emma Raducanu almost double bageled her. Yeah. Sir Robert Tormo won less than 20 points in the whole match. Like, that's ridiculous. It's astonishing.
Speaking of having your spirits crushed on a large stage, Denis Shapovalov could not join his compatriots in the fourth round, losing to Rocket Lloyd Harris, the man, the Lancaster from South Africa. We'll get to Lloyd Harris in the next segment for a full 20 minutes because we love the guy. But that was a meager ending for Shapo. I did enjoy him mimicking giving his racket to Mikhail Yuzhny to play at the end of that match, because I would have loved to see that, to be honest. We would have loved to see that. But that was not fun to watch at all.
Yeah, I mean, Mikhail Yuzhny might have had a little bit more fight. No, that's unfair.
We know he's a gamer. Mikhail, we know he's a gamer. It's true.
So, you know, when Arsenal used to be like something in football, Dev, and you know, when they were just...
Why? Why are you doing this? Okay, continue.
Yeah. I'm trying to come up with a perfect metaphor. And you know, like,
when I can see where you're going.
They'd go to away to like...
West Brom.
To West Brom, yeah. They'd go away to West Brom, and then West Brom turn up and they actually attack. And also like, oh shit, they're not supposed to do that. They're supposed to just roll over. That's kind of what this match felt like. And then it was just like a comfortable 2-0 win for West Brom.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I felt this match was, which is that Shapo went into it with the expectation that he was the seventh seed. Lloyd Harris came out, played really well, served really big, and Shapo didn't play well. And that's what happened. When you come up against a guy who's in the top 50 in the world, who's had a good year on a hard court, he's going to make it really, really difficult for you. Shapov didn't respond. That's just honestly pure and simple. He just did not play very well. And you can get into the tactical analysis, and I'm happy to do that with anyone. But like on a pure level, if you don't bring fight to this match against a guy who's up for it, you're going to lose.
Against a guy with a huge serve and a huge forehand, you cannot give him that big of a window. And I think he said after the match, he kind of gave it away. And he also mentioned what Lloyd Harris does well on the hard court. But I think he's right. Like, I think he gave this match away. And I don't think you can remove the positives from this year. And we have Wimbledon. We have the Djokovic semifinal. We have the level he was at there. But I think since then, it's been a bit of a disappointment. Another one of those situations where you think maybe some time away from the grind of the tour. Because Dennis played a lot of random matches all over the year. Maybe a break will do him well.
All right. We're running out of time, Dev. We're up against the clock.
Ashley
Barty, the world number one, is out. Dumped unceremoniously out of this tournament.
Do I get praised for picking Shelby Rogers as a breakout player 2 years ago? Probably not, right? It's probably too late in the end to get this badge of credit.
You don't get credit for that, no.
All right, that's fine. That's fine. I appealed. I appealed, and that's fine with that harsh judgment. But I didn't see this coming, to be honest. This is one of those.
No, not at all. Like,
did the crowd do something, or what happened to Ash? But 5-2 lead in the final set. Twice serving for the match and not being able to close it out. Probably one of the more shocking things I've seen on a tennis court in a while.
Ash Barty looked incredibly pissed off. You know, and those cameras that follow them into the player's locker. She looked so, so annoyed.
I get it, to the level I've ever
seen it.
I wonder, again, another one of those match accumulation things, but I think we're maybe providing too big of a defense here. It just went away from her real quick.
Those matches do happen.
Yeah.
They don't usually happen to the world number one on Arthur Ashe Stadium, but she's lost 8 matches all year. It's been fine. It's going to happen periodically, but you got to discredit your opponent for hanging in there and fighting as opposed to Barty losing this one. But goodness me, that one's going to be tough to take and it's going to sting for a while.
Simon, there is no dream without sleep. And I think Bianca Andreescu has proven that to us once again in New York. We had low expectations, low hopes. But she doesn't lose in NYC, I think. I think that's safe to say. She beat a lucky loser in the third round. Really deep, really impressive display. But Maria Sakkari in the fourth round, man, if you want a good test of where you're at physically, I think playing the fittest person on the tour is a good chance to do that.
The fittest person in the world, potentially.
Yeah.
fittest athlete in the world. So I was all prepared to take some shots at Bianca Andreescu and say that I had seen her more in advertisements here in Canada than I had to see her on the tennis court through the US Open, but she's played really well and she's been full value to get to that matchup against Sakkari. The only reason I put it on this list is because she is the biggest question mark, I think, still left in this tournament. She's capable of winning it. We clearly know that. She's played decently well. She comes to a match against Sakkari. Watch out, right?
Yeah.
She can win this tournament again.
You know what? Watch out for Elina Svitolina, who's just beat Simona Halep pretty convincingly, who I picked as well, to the mockery of Simon Bushel, who laughed at me. And now she's still in the mix. Karolina Pliskova, who I think we both had making a run here, is in the mix and has a good-looking draw. And Belinda Bencic, looking like she just won a gold medal a few weeks ago, very much in the mix. But no Ash Barty. I mean, I was pretty confident in her ability to make it to the final, but now it's again wide open and a lot of these players that have been close but just missed out, love to see it for them.
According to my calculations on my stopwatch, I have 8 seconds to talk about the Jannik Sinner-Gael Monfils match. I can do
it. You got it.
Jannik Sinner for life. Boy doesn't choke, does he?
So, friend of the show, Priyanka, was at the US Open, watched Sinner, quote, kids got ice in his veins. Do you feel like a weirdly proud dad, even though you're not related to any of these kids, when you watch Sinner and Alcaraz show out? Do you feel pride, Simon?
I do.
It's great.
I take pride in talent evaluation. Great. How could you not? It's definitely one of those things that you got to take some sort of pride in.
Get Carlos's email and tell him that there's some hairstyles we can go forward with when he gets his first slam. He doesn't have to keep doing this. Fed radically changed his hair, if we remember correctly, after he got those titles, right? So we can pivot for sure.
There is a Lego model of Carlos Alcaraz definitely out there for him. He looks like one of those Lego firemen. So
he does.
Maybe he should change that.
All right. that's the tennis. Plenty left to come as you listen to this, with Monday kicking off some round of 16 and, of course, the quarterfinals. But before we wrap up this episode of Open Era, we get to our parting shots and our section within a segment with a new name again, possibly. We'll see, coming up next. Welcome back to the Open Era podcast. It's that time again, Simon. Parting shots. You alluded to some fashion hits and misses from the week that was. Let's hear it, sir.
Well, we obviously had to put the question out to Pog's Tennis Channel, because how can you not if you spend any time around tennis Twitter and the man himself,
the verdict,
who manages the true verdict. The verdict is exceptionally interesting. My top line impressions is that I think I am positive on the ball kids / ball adults, apparently, because it looks like there's some 70-year-old men who are at the back of the court as well. I think it's a pretty good look. I think it looks like the South African flag, which is always a good bold step, and did not mind it at all. Also liked a lot the outfit that Lauren Davis was wearing. I thought it was very, very strong. Pog was talking about the outfit that Berrettini is wearing, that blue, that deep sort of shocking mm-hmm. blue. I think that's pretty good.
It's nice.
And he sort of, his favorite was the outfit that Coco Gauff is wearing, the New Balance one, that shocking pink skirt and the sort of zebra sort of pattern that she has in the top half of it. I'm not a huge fan of it, I have to say, but then again, I'm 32, so you should take everything that I say with a grain of salt. Your favorite outfit from this tournament, Dev?
So I know what Nike's trying to do. They're trying to recall back to like the classic badge look, the court look that was signature, and they're using a lot of those colors with their kits here, but I think what Denis Shapovalov was wearing was the best version of it, color combo-wise. I liked how clean it looked. I thought he looked fantastic, so I think Shapo's kit was my favorite. I generally like Riley Opaka in general, like what he's doing, getting fined for bringing non-tour sanctioned bags out because the tour is a joke for this, but doing his own thing and just truly being okay with whatever he wants to represent, which I think is pretty cool. So I would have to shout out Fila again.
Oh my gosh.
I think Fila has been having a really strong summer, and they brought it again this week. The Monfils fit was sick, and I think I agree with Pogs with the Berrettini shirt. The problem, I think Nike's, the dresses, the saffron type thing, look like some sort of fundamentalist religious angle, which I wasn't super down with, or a Doctor Strange shout out, I think that you called out, but I wasn't feeling that. It's weird. I guess we're giving too little credit to the players individually picking the fashions that they want, because it's obviously not the companies forcing them to wear these things, but I just didn't think Adidas brought it at all with these fits.
I was thinking during the course of the week, and this conversation with Pog as well online, of just, wouldn't it be so interesting if the top brands, or just any brand, like not even the top brands, and top is the wrong word as well, like the multinational billionaire brands, what if these players had an outfit every day for each round? It would just make such interesting storylines, just mm-hmm. like just to have new fashion trends being brought to, so you're not always seeing the same thing, but it makes it a bit more interesting, especially if you have someone who is sponsored and has this sort of head-to-toe look. You could do something creative where you have something each round.
Golfers don't wear the same thing every round either, correct? So, mm-hmm. you know what?
I mean, golfers don't wear happening. Good things anyway.
No, that's very true, but that's definitely happening. I can see this is one of those things where 10 years down the road predictions, you should have said this on that show, Simon, because that's a very smart pick. Well done, sir.
So 2 points really quickly. Worst outfit goes to friend of the show and commentator and journalist Ben Rothenberg for his shoe choice. Nah, that's not fair. Let's back up and say some advice for Ben. I know you're listening. Nothing but love on this show. If you're going to do the shoes, my man, go without socks. Don't go with a sock combo. Like, the shoes are good enough on their own. You don't need to go loud socks as well. For no one else knows what I'm talking about, then go and check out Ben's Twitter account.
I have no idea. I also don't know, but are they dress shoes? Because I'm not down with this sockless dress shoe look that I see people are doing.
He was wearing a pair of, I'm going to call them crocodile skin loafers.
Wowza. Okay.
Best version of it I can come up with.
But I knew exactly what you were talking about as you said it, so well done. But I have seen people not wearing socks with those, so Perhaps we are out of step, sir.
Good pun as well. Just thoughts on the pink tote bag in general.
The Riley Opaque.
Bold.
Right.
Very, very bold. $10,000 pink tote bag.
$10,000? That's how much it costs. I didn't know that. Okay, well, consumption is king. I had no comment. I guess I will redact some of my prior praise for Riley Opaque. $10,000. What?
Yeah. Let's move on swiftly. Carla Suarez Navarro played her last competitive match at the US Open. What a story. What a run. I did put the thing in the Discord saying that I'm holding myself to account that we need to mention it.
Because you did. What a player. And you did.
Someone that we will cover when we get outside of the realms of Grand Slams, we will cover her more in depth because what a career and what a fight and what a story in general. So I just wanted to take the time to shout out that it was an incredible and emotional atmosphere in her last match. And for all those Carla Suarez Navarro fans, we haven't forgotten about you. We will do a piece on her at some point in the next 6 months.
I know scheduling at tournaments is super hard and you obviously have thousands of matches to get through and you can't put everyone where they should be put, but I didn't think Carla Suarez Navarro should have been on court 5 for this last match. Also against Danielle Collins, who was American. So we easily could have been put on a show court. I thought for what was at stake and it being possibly your last match, that's one of those things where it would have been nice, but I guess doesn't always go that way, Simon.
Danielle Collins, who is capital A American. Like when you look up American in the dictionary, you find a picture of Danielle Collins. So it wasn't exactly going to be easy sailing for Carla Suarez Navarro in her last match.
The next gen, I don't know if we can call them done. Like the next gen is still clearly playing, but what is this new gen, Simon? The next gen has been thrown into the dumpster for the new gen? Explain.
Well, all this stuff was trash anyway, right? Like the next gen, it was just a marketing ploy. That
the next gen is Medvedev, Zverev, and those cats, correct?
Exactly, yes. Right, so that's who it was that the ATP tried to brand them as that, and it's become sort of a crutch that's been used to beat them with mercilessly. Yep. But I saw Sinner, Alcaraz and Musetti being called the next gen, which I thought was, I mean, crap. But anyway, I saw someone referring to them this week as the new gen, which I actually thought was quite interesting and better branding. In general, though, we can probably just let this branding die, can we not?
I think so. We might not need it at all because they might win a big title quickly enough that we can just ditch it entirely, which is the prayer, right? We really hope this happens so that we don't have to group them all together like we ended up doing with Medvedev, Tsitsipas, Zverev, even though they weren't exactly that close in age.
I take such love in the fact that Jannik Sinner looks continually haggard. He looks like a 60-year-old man walking around the court and yet plays like an absolute monster.
Even just the way he bends. His bend is that of an older man. It's remarkable to watch. Do you think Musetti is in this conversation firmly? I think I'm pretty confident of the other two, but do you think he's firmly in this conversation of the new gen?
Musetti took two sets off Novak Djokovic.
But was that real again, though? Was that real? I watched the rest of that match, Simon, and I don't know if any of that was real. So pardon me for not fully believing, but
he will definitely have the lowest floor, shall we say, out of those other two players.
Right. Okay. And that's, and I think
it's
fair.
So wild.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. And okay. Patrick Mortoglou is everywhere. He's literally in every player's box. He's in every interview. He's on every social media feed. Who doesn't he coach, Simon?
I mean, what a superhuman effort to make it into every box of all 128 players on the men's side and all 128 on the women's side. Incredible. Didn't think it was possible for one player to coach both players in a match as
well. In a match, too, yeah.
Goodness me. You refer to him.
Yeah, tennis is Rich Paul. And I think that's kind of where he's carved out this role where there might not be a more influential person that's not a player than him in tennis right now in terms of whose ear he has, how much power I think the academy he runs has. I mean, it speaks for itself, who he represents and the people he interacts with on a daily basis. You see him talking in the box with, and it's like, okay, this guy is one of the kingmakers in this game. So I think the Rich Paul comp is pretty accurate. I think generally he is a force for good and improvement. I'm curious where you land on that.
TBD.
TBD. TBD. Yeah. This is me praising the supervillain before things go crazy, and I wish we could look back on my comments a year from now, but I generally want to believe that forcing people to even consider the idea of U2S is a positive in this stodgy game.
I tend to give praise to people who make tennis more accessible and break down class barriers as opposed to putting Yu-Gi-Oh cards in the game.
Wow.
In terms of growing it.
You turn your back on Yu-Gi-Oh once, you never come back, sir. I just want you to be clear on this. You turn your back on Yu-Gi-Oh now, you're never welcome back.
So Maria Sakkari is vaccinated. Quote Maria Sakkari: "I am vaccinated. My family is vaccinated. My team, all my friends. I don't have anyone around me who isn't. It seems strange to me that a big percentage of the players isn't. I guess they have their reasons." I like listening to Maria Sakkari talk. She's a very interesting person in general, but this is a point of contention that we talked about last week. There is too many players on this damn tour. There's too many damn players on this damn tour who are not vaccinated, Dev. It's not good enough. We've got to start calling this shit out to the point where, how are these players not being booed? How are they not being called out on court? And I know Novak Djokovic is getting a lot of stick from the crowd this week. I think some of it a little unfair, I have to say, given how...
not even vaccinated at all. It's just pure spite, pure hatred.
He's incredibly, incredibly hated amongst this crowd. But like the fact that some of these players are getting away with it, and also the fact that it's just not even remotely being questioned by some of the journalists. I mean, at least Rothenberg's doing some of the work on this stuff, right? To find out whether or not these are public figures.
I thought Victoria Azarenka nailed it in her comment. She's like, it is strange that to be in attendance as a spectator, you have to be vaccinated, but to be in attendance as a player, you don't. Like, that's super messed up. And she's basically saying, like, I'm willing to hear your opinion or your thoughts on what your decision will be, as long as it's not a conspiracy theory. And I'm like, okay, Vika damn well knows. And she's bang on. And I don't know if it's just who we've been hearing from or who's been speaking the most passionately about it. But once again, I feel like the vanguards on the WTA are speaking passionately about this. And I think it's much appreciated, whether it be Sakkari or Victoria Azarenka as well. But it is a bit mind-boggling, Bush, that you have to be vaccinated to go watch this tournament, but you don't have to be vaccinated to play. Seems a bit backwards.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous, Dev. I can't get my head around it.
Yep. Just like this whole damn existence in 2021 as we go into September and month 900 of the pandemic.
All right, let's get... we have some really rapid-fire things to get through. First and foremost, Lionel Messi made his debut for Paris Saint-Germain, and it was live-streamed by Ibai Llanos on Twitch. Ibai Llanos, who seems to somehow ass backwards fall into a multi-million-dollar contract on the basis of being friends with a bunch of footballers, which is quite funny. Anyway,
the beautiful game.
Yeah, absolutely. Nepotism works, folks. That's what everyone needs to know about this. Anyway, it made me think that we chatted about this a while ago, probably around the start of the season, that if the ATP and the WTA were smart about this, they would get a bunch of high-profile Twitch streamers or people who are in that world to start going down this route to make, I mean, some finals. If you're not going to do whole tournaments, and that's fine, you could do some finals, right? Or some semifinals that you do have accessible for certain platforms that could be more interesting. My question to you, Dev, is I think you agree with me in large. I don't need to... I feel like you agree with me anyway, but... Okay, whatever.
the one thing I will say, I do agree with you. The one thing I will say, though, is I do think that tennis not having set time limits hampers us in this regard. Because we cannot schedule things with these big shots when you don't give them exact timings. And from my experience, that helps.
Stop bringing logistics into this. That's not
but
allowed.
I agree with you. Sorry, continue.
If you're streaming the US Open final, who are you going to be streaming with? That's my question to you. And if the answer is not me, then that's the end of this podcast.
Okay, so it would be you. It would be you. I see the pained thing you wrote in the notes about how you hope my answer is you. So yes, I would hope it was you.
Who's our third wheel? That's the point.
Third wheel?
Who's our
Agassi
third wheel on the stream?
Has to be Andre Agassi.
Oh, amazing. Fantastic. Yeah,
again, if it's a 1,000 series, maybe it's an hour. Maybe it's a quick blowout double bagel, but 5.5 hours. I mean, that's what Twitch is, though, right? I guess Twitch really is however long you want to make it, and then basically you could cycle in guests as well. So this time limit thing that I was worried about, don't worry about it. Logistics out the window. Twitch forever.
Yours is Andre Agassi. My third wheel on this is Devang Desai, Simon Wishel, and Maria Sharapova.
Wow. We'll snack on Sugarpova during it as well. Our favorite sugary snack. I like it. I like it a lot.
Muddy Fish, Netflix series, is out next week. It talks about the mental health challenges that Muddy Fish suffered throughout his career, bouts of anxiety and panic attacks. It looks very, very good. He seems like a really interesting dude who happens to be an incredible golfer. If you watch him, he's so natural, the way he swings a golf club. Really, really, really good player who never really achieved the heights that he did, probably because he, you know, was ill for a large part of his career, and very excited to get to this documentary. So put that one on your radar for the coming week. Novak Djokovic, in a very entertaining fashion, did not realize he was on live TV on ESPN, producing one of the better moments of this week as well, where he was being asked questions by the host and just like politely nodded and gave grunting answers. If you haven't seen that, encourage you to go and check it out. Milos Raonic ragging on the ATP tour following the PGA tour signing a deal with Netflix for a Drive to Survive-esque deal, which I also thought was very funny. And yeah, ATP, WTA, what are you doing? ATP, WTA, WTF.
Well done. Okay, first of all, well done. Milos is going at it on Twitter. I like his...
no.
I like his takes. He's coming at people. Although bring us more, Milos. Marty Fish, I just want to second your comments, Bush, and also say, I feel like, and this might be not totally accurate, but I definitely feel like at that time, he was one of the first athletes to publicly mention dealing with these sorts of mental health issues in a public forum. And I think he was a bit of a trailblazer in that regard. So I'm also very excited to check out this series.
Lastly, in this part of parting shots before we get to the segment, within a segment, I made Betty Crocker cupcakes for the first time in my life. Somewhat underwhelmed, I have to say, Dev. Somewhat underwhelmed.
I can tell by the tone of your voice as well that Betty Crocker is going to come in for some scathing criticism. That might not be totally fair, but... It's interesting. You talk about making that fantastic lemon concoction last week, and this is a baked virtuoso, a baked master, and yet you talk about these cupcakes like they're a poison apple. What happened?
I just think like boxed cupcakes, it's just not you got to put a bit more love into it, right? You got to follow a bit more of a recipe.
All right. Not everyone has the time, sir. And I think Betty Crocker is for the person on the move. You know, you got to make some cupcakes, but also you got to go to a dinner party later. And then there's some drinks on a patio, right? So it's for this go-go lifestyle.
Are you suggesting I'm class signaling?
I think you are. I think you are, to be honest. I think it's very interesting for a card-carrying socialist to come out against some economic cupcakes. Teach their own, I guess.
Jesus Christ. Let's move to the section within a segment. Let's move
on
quickly. Here we go.
So I tease this, but a new name possibly for section within a segment? I don't like either of these options, to be honest.
Oh, really?
I like SWAS. SWAS.
You like SWAS?
We'll call it SWAS. sounds extremely offensive, and we'll have to check this acronym out, but I like it better than last points. Or two challenges remaining. Because I don't know if those are better. So let's get on with it. Hook me up.
We're going to put a Twitter poll out this week, right? It's going to be write an answer.
Swaz.
Last points. Or two challenges. I think two challenges remaining is quite good. Like, I thought it was quite funny. It's an homage to our friend and lovely tennis host and correspondent, Ben Rothenberg. And also is two challenges. Like, there's two challenges left in the show. Come on, people. Anyway, I will go first. Two things that follow roughly in the same comparison. There's a great Raheem Sterling photo following his goal against Hungary in the World Cup qualifiers that took place during this week, where Sterling was a victim of some pretty harrowing and horrible racist abuse that really has no place anywhere and has not had any place ever in society. But there's a wonderful photo of a bunch of very aggressive looking fans and him being showered and sprayed with beer, which I will put in the comments to the tweet when we put out the episode, because I think it's a wonderful photo. And the second part of that is listening to the drama unfold from Gimlet's Reply All. I had to listen to it when it first got taken off the air because of a bunch of, let's say, harrowing things that happened within the production studio of Gimlet, and especially within Reply All. So if you want sort of some catharsis of some, let's say, shitbag bosses and some anti-union trash, it's quite a cathartic 2 minutes followed by a 20-minute episode talking about how you know, one of the hosts and one of the producers was, let's say, not great when it came to work-based practices, and also practices when it comes to race relations either. So it's quite cathartic to see two people like that dumped out unceremoniously on their asses. So I fully encourage everyone to check that out if you're looking for a moment of wonderful pathos.
Holy smokes. Okay. Well, yours are wide-ranging. I'm not even sure I'm using that term correctly, but I will stick in a more tennis-related one. Friend of the show, David Goss, who I do a soccer podcast with as well, lives in New York and is a tennis fan. So he went to the US Open this week, but he was kind of asking for a guide of where to go, what to watch, who to watch. And I was basically guiding him like in 24, I remember Jack Bauer had Chloe, who he talked to, and he would basically evade through things and like get to places. But basically, I was his Chloe because I was telling him, go to court five. There's Alcaraz is playing there. Go to court seven. There's a five-setter in progress. And he was going to all these places and really enjoying it. So I felt like I was doing good work there. And it made me really want to go to the US Open next year, which again, after coming out pretty heavily anti-US Open, it feels strange to say, but I will be there next year, Simon, and we'll go together. But I think we have to go to New York. Just logistically, it probably makes the most sense as well.
So you're having a nice back and forth with friend of the show, Stephen Caldwell, as well, which I found very
yeah,
amusing.
That's right. Call us Alcaraz, bringing people together. It's fantastic. Speaking of, Leila Fernandez is holding her own against Angie Kerber. How many breaks of serve do you think will be in this match, Simon? 80? How high can we go? Because right now, I don't know if anyone has held serve yet.
That's what we want. Makes for exciting tennis, doesn't it?
Fantastic.
What a week it's been. What a week. Looking forward to the finals week as well. Should be good.
Plenty more coming. Hopefully we see some Canadians in the business end of the tournament. Odds are looking pretty good for that as well. All right. A reminder, we are on patreon.com/openerapod. Join us there. Get the show ad free. Get it a bit early on Sundays. Join us on the Discord. Talking to people at the tournament. Sending us their picks. It's pretty cool. So join us on Patreon. You get Discord access as well. And you get the show ad free. We're on Twitter.com/openerapod. Be sure to vote in our poll. Swass versus last points versus two challenges remaining. We'll keep that poll running for 12 minutes, not 12 hours, if that is an option. For producer Clay on the ones and twos, many thanks to him. And for Simon, thank you so much for listening to the Open Air Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.
Botik van de Zandsgroep.